though he wanted Midnight to give Aiden a different answer. A long metal chain ran from his belt loop to his back pocket. He twisted it around one finger idly, in the same fidgety way that his sister bit her lip rings.
"I'm going to blog the whole thing," Midnight said. "That's how we're going to pay for stuff after our trade goods run out. I've got a tip jar on the site, and there are ads and stuff. My readership was already pretty good, but it's gone through the roof since we ran away. 100,000 unique visitors are watching Winters and my adventure. We made a promise to each other, and to them. No more birthdays," they recited more or less at the same time, then flushed and laughed a little. It was a vow, a piece of a chant, their scripture, something they took so seriously that saying it aloud embarrassed them.
"Because you're planning on dying and rising again?" Gabriel said from atop the car hood.
They glanced at him in surprise, as if they'd forgotten he was there. His face was shadowed enough to hide his eyes, but his unnatural stillness should have unnerved them.
"I just posted about our last supper," Midnight said, taking her phone and holding it out to Aiden, leaning closer than she had to. "It's kind of a tradition. Before you go through the gates, you eat one last meal. All your favorites. See, Winter had pizza with olives, ketchup chips, and bubble tea. And here's the picture of mine. Steak and eggs with a slice of apple pie. I was so excited that I only took a bite of each. You know, like how you get one last special meal of your choosing before you go to the electric chair."
Last meal. Because they were hoping to die, Tana realized. She saw how Aiden's gaze drifted over Midnight's skin. She really was beautiful, with large black eyes and all that blue hair, with earrings in the shape of daggers swinging from her earlobes. He grinned as if what she just said was very funny. He was going to bite her. Tana got out of the car, slamming the door behind her. They all looked over, Midnight frowning at having her conversation interrupted. "Aiden," Tana said warningly. "Everything okay?" He turned toward her, a strange smile relaxing into a real one as she got closer. He shrugged and threw an easy arm over her shoulder.
"Midnight, Winter, this is my girlfriend, Tana."
Midnight took a step back from Aiden. Winter looked at Tana in a way that told her just how bad she must appear in her ripped and filthy dress, hair sticking up all over the place.
"I'm not..."
Tana started, pulling away from him. But Aiden was still smiling. "And she's worried because I'm sick. I'm cold. She's worried I'm going to bite you, and she should worry, because I want to bite you. I want to real bad." At that, Gabriel looked up again, his gaze catching Tana's. She couldn't read his expression, but she could tell he wasn't pleased. One of Midnight's hands flew up to cover her mouth, chipped silver nail polish and onyx rings on her fingers. Winter studied Aiden's face.
"You really are, aren't you?"
"He was bitten last night,"
said Gabriel, leaning forward, black hair hanging in his face.
"He can control the hunger now for short periods, more or less, but it will become worse. He has maybe another day or two before he ought to be restrained."
Tana expected Aiden to give some response, but he was quiet. Maybe he hadn't realized it would get worse. Tana thought of her mother screaming up from the basement and shuddered. She thought of the way her skin had felt chilled when she'd woken. She wasn't sure why Aiden hadn't said anything about the possibility of her being cold, whether he was being nice or whether he figured they would be less impressed if it wasn't him alone who was dangerous. But either way, she was grateful.
"Can I interview you?"
Midnight asked Aiden, pulling out her phone and fiddling with it, opening some app.
"For the blog. Can you describe what it feels like? The hunger?"
"Careful," Winter said, putting his hand on his sister's arm. Tana could see that Midnight wasn't listening. Her mouth was slightly open, fascinated. A mouse in love with a snake.
"Come on,"
Midnight said to Aiden, losing her cool affect entirely. She bounced on her dirty ballet flats.
"Please, I've never talked to anyone experiencing what you are. I'm so curious, and my readers would be super curious too. It must be amazing to have all that power running through your veins."
It's like you're hollow, Aiden said, looking into the camera as if he was ready to devour all the viewers, looking as if he were an understudy for one of those online vampire celebrities. Hollow and empty, and there's only one thing that matters. I can't believe this is happening, Tana said, walking over to Gabriel. He held out a cup to her, the one she'd seen beside him on the hood when she woke. His black shirt was stretched tight against his chest, and he had a crumpled paper bag resting beside him. They say a long sleep is the best cure for all sickness. She took a long swallow of the coffee. It was too sweet and choked with cream, as though it had been mixed by someone who had no idea what it was supposed to taste like. Someone who hadn't tasted food in a long while. She reached for the bag. What's in here, donuts? He turned away as though he didn't want to watch her open it. Take it. That's for you as well. The bag turned out to hold a necklace of bohemian garnets, clustered together like pomegranate seeds, with a huge garnet-studded locket the size of a fig hanging from the center point. The gold clasp on the back was broken, as though it had been ripped from someone's throat, and the locket itself was empty. It rested on a bed of loose bills, some ink-stained, some smeared brownish-red, some single dollars and some twenties, mixed in with a few euros, all jammed together in a messy pile. "Where did you get all this?" she asked. At that moment, Midnight screamed. Tana whirled toward them and felt Gabriel's cold hands closed around her. Frozen fingers dug into her skin just below her ribcage. His grip was so firm it was like being held by a bronze figure. Midnight was on the ground, her phone tossed to one side, her hands scrabbling to push Aiden away. He crouched on top of her, pushing her velvet shirt off her shoulder. Winter had hold of one of Aiden's arms and was trying to pull him backward. Tana's feet kicked out ineffectually against the car bumper as she was dragged up into the air. She felt Gabriel's chest against her back, smooth and chilled as stone. She felt the icy curve of his jaw where it rested against the top of her head. "Hush, Tana," Gabriel said, sliding his cheek downward over her hair so that he could murmur against her throat. Terror overwhelmed her, vast and animal. Her body took over, twisting and writhing and clawing. It was like being in that dark basement again, her mother's cold lips giving her one final kiss. "Hush," he said. "It's almost over."
"No!" Tana shouted, struggling uselessly. "No, no, no, I have to help him. Get off of me!"
Then suddenly he did, hands sliding free of her. She staggered away, nearly falling to her knees. Winter had let go of Aiden's arm in preference for pulling him away from Midnight by his hair. Aiden's head lashed back and forth, Midnight's hand up under his jaw, pushing him away from her. But he was close, close enough for his teeth to snap just above the bare skin of her arm. His fingernails raked at her shoulder, making bloody runnels. Her scream spiraled up into the night air. For a moment, Tama's mind was blank. Then she rushed over, crouching down, so she could dig her hands into Midnight's armpits and haul her up. Aiden looked at Tana, and for a moment, it was clear he thought she would help him. Then she scuttled away, pulling Midnight as hard as she could, and he snarled in comprehension. Aiden went for Midnight's legs, but she was fast enough to kick him in the chest, hard. Even though she was wearing only slippers, he stumbled to one knee, gasping. One hand held out as if to ward off more violence. Winter locked his arm around Aiden's neck and held him like that. For a moment, Aiden's body went slack. Then he brought up his shaking fingers stained red. He was about to lick them clean. Tana leaped forward, grabbing his wrists and pulling them to her, wiping his hands against her dress. She wasn't sure how much human blood would turn him, but she didn't want to take any chances. Aiden started to laugh. A choked sound with Winter's arm against his throat. Midnight sobbed softly, red soaking her torn shirt, turning the blue velvet to black. Tana looked at Gabriel. He was watching her with half-lidded eyes of glittering scarlet, an intent and covetous stare.
"You didn't do anything," she accused, pointing a trembling finger.
He swayed slightly toward the scene of carnage, like a tree bending in the wind, as if she had beckoned him.
You could have stopped him, and you just let it happen.
It's dangerous to go to Cold Town infected, but not yet turned. His voice was distant, but something in the way he moved his mouth, some languorousness, showed that the blood in the air and the feel of her struggle against him had ignited his desire to feed.
It would have been safer if you just let it happen. Every new vampire born in Cold Town compromises the blood supply. There are only so many donors.
It's dangerous to be infected anywhere, Tana said. I just don't want him to die.
One way or another, we all wind up dead, Gavriel said, his eyes on Aiden. But then he bent and picked up the coffee cup from the ground, bringing over the remaining liquid to wash off Aiden's fingers. Tana knelt on the cool asphalt of the parking lot, carefully scraping Midnight's skin from underneath Aiden's nails with her own.
Buzzkill, Aiden said, low.
Cold sweat dampened the bangs of his forehead. He grinned up at Gavriel, his head lolling against Winter's arm now, as though there were no more fight in him.
You owe me, Tana told Aiden. I hope you know just how much you owe me.
Leaning over them, Gavriel's face was no longer shaded, his eyes catching the blinking lights of the rest stop sign, his skin too pale to belong to a living human. Winter stood abruptly, freeing Aiden and backing away from the vampire.
Something the matter?
Gavriel asked him. Aiden stretched out, looking up at the stars. Midnight pushed herself to her feet a little unsteadily, wiping tears off her face and smearing her black mascara. She saw Gavriel and froze as her brother had.
Red as roses. Yes, those are my real eyes. Am I not what you've been looking for?
Gavriel's smile was all teeth.
I have been here all along waiting for you to notice. I can give you what you want. I can give you endless oblivion.
Stop it, Tana said, hitting him on the shoulder, continuing to pretend he was a regular person who wasn't scary in the hopes he'd forget too, continuing to pretend she had any power at all in this situation. Stop it right now. I've had enough of everyone attacking everyone.
Her words seemed to break the spell he'd had over Winter. He put his hand on his sister's unhurt shoulder.
We should get you to an emergency room.
No hospital, Midnight said groggily. I just need bandages. We can get them inside.
Jenny, said Winter, please, let's go home.
She looked at him with wide, black, furious eyes.
We have everything we need right here. And don't ever call me that name again. Ever.
Tana looked toward Aiden, still staring dazedly up at the stars. He was breathing faster, as though he couldn't quite inhale fully. One of his hands was pressed to his heart. He barely seemed to notice when she called his name softly.
Go with them,
Gavriel told Tana, sitting down beside Aiden and pushing up the sleeve of his own t-shirt.
Since you wish it, I won't let him feed on the living. But there's no reason he can't drink from the dead. It will curb his hunger.
Go, Tana. We'll be here when you return.
She went. Chapter 10. When life is woe and hope is dumb, the world says go, the grave says come. Arthur Gitterman. The winter before the sundown party, before Tana went missing and maybe was infected, before Pearl got scared and mad as the days went on without Tana calling to tell them anything, there had been an assembly at the high school to discuss vampirism. Even though the 7th and 8th graders were in a different building, they were all, including Pearl, marched over and herded to the very front of the auditorium. As Pearl went down the steps, she craned her head, looking for her sister. The upperclassmen seemed so much older than she was, loud and intimidating. Some of the senior boys had stubble, and the girls dressed as if they were in college. in her denim skirt with leggings under it, with brand new pink sparkly Converse sneakers and a side ponytail. Pearl had felt she looked cute when she got dressed in the morning. Now she felt like a little kid. Pearl! A voice called over the roar of students finding seats and shouting to their friends. Turning, she spotted Tana and Pauline waving to her from about halfway down the auditorium. Tana cupped her hands around her mouth to make her voice louder. Come sit with us! Pearl looked after the rest of her class, obediently trooping to the front. Then she looked at her sister waving. Finally, she decided and picked her way past the older kids to the seat Tana had saved for her.
I'm supposed to be over there, Pearl said, pointing to her teacher.
But we're going to have more fun over here, Pauline promised her, smiling a big let's all get in trouble together smile. She was wearing a black and white striped dress, bright orange boots, and a vintage pink hat with a veil. Seeing her and Tana together at school was weird, like seeing a part of her sister that was usually hidden. At home, Tana was the one who made dinner when Dad forgot, which was a lot, who knew only three recipes, spaghetti, salad with a chicken cutlet on top, and burritos, who was good at braiding hair and not pulling too hard, except for when she did French braids, and who could fix almost anything, sinks, toilets, favorite mugs. At school, she was obviously somebody else. Somebody who swaggered around in her big boots and black leather jacket, taking auto shop with the boys and glowering at everyone who wasn't Pearl or Pauline as if she wanted to knock them out. Right then, she and Pauline were leaning back in their chairs, grinning at each other over Pearl's head. It was weird.
We have a special speaker today, Principal Wong told them in her no-nonsense, embarrass the school and I'll make you sorry voice.
Short hair combed tightly to one side and gelled to stay there.
We're going to hear from someone who was trapped inside Springfield when the walls went up. Thank you for agreeing to come and tell your story, Yashira Baez. Let's give her a big Astell regional welcome.
Everyone applauded noisily, with a few sarcastic whoops from the boys in the back. Pearl leaned down to take a strawberry-scented pen and notebook out of her bag, in case she was supposed to write stuff down. A small Latina woman stepped onto the stage, wearing jeans and a muted yellow cardigan, looking old enough to be someone's grandmother.
I'm going to tell you this story just like it happened. I was headed into Springfield to get my great-aunt out when the military blockaded the area. She was in an assisted living apartment complex, and she was too old to drive. So when I heard the rumor that the city was going to be closed off, I thought I could get her out in time. Unfortunately, I got trapped in there with her. I lived in the first cold town for 2 long years, till I could figure out a way to get enough cash together to buy myself a marker from a bounty hunter. I could never have done it without donations from my church, so now I go around to schools to try to give back to the community. People ask all the time whether vampires are like us. I always say that in my 2 years trapped inside, I played checkers with vampires. I sat on stoops with vampires, and they were a lot like the people they'd been before, but they weren't the same. Vampires are predators, and we're prey. You've got to never forget that. She looked out at the audience very seriously. Circuses tame tigers, get them to jump through flaming hoops. Those tigers are real nice to their trainers, I bet. Bump them with their big heads. Roll on their backs like house cats. But if they're hungry enough, those tigers are going to eat those same trainers they were so nice to. A couple of people in the audience laughed nervously. Tana didn't laugh. Pauline looked over at her a little worriedly.
Now, I never assume that everyone knows the basics, so we're going to go over them again. Infected people. People who have vampire blood in their veins. People who've gone cold. They can't spread the infection. They're infected, but not infectious. Got it?
Obviously, Pauline said under her breath. Otherwise, the whole world would be buried in vampires.
Miss Baez went on, going over stuff she considered basic. Pearl knew most of it, or at least she felt like she'd heard it before. Once a person was bitten,
Symptoms appeared within 12 to 48 hours. Sometimes people were rescued before a bite could be completed and experienced minor symptoms but didn't actually go cold. A very small number of people had immune systems able to fight off the infection. Miss Baez told the story of an Indonesian bounty hunter who'd been bitten on 8 occasions, and even though his skin was mottled by scars from the attacks, he didn't get infected. He swore by the cocktail of snake blood mixed with a drop of infected human blood and plenty of arak that he drank each morning, his recipe for staving off infection. He considered himself immune until he was bitten for the 9th time and succumbed to the cold, turning soon after. Pearl noticed Tana rubbing her arm where Mom had hurt her. She had a big scar that sometimes she hid and other times she showed off, as though she was daring people to ask her about it. Grandma and Grandpa had taken Pearl aside years ago and told her that Tana was going to be messed up in the head because of Mom, and that Pearl was going to have to watch out for her. Pearl wasn't sure what that meant, except for times like right then, when she leaned over, took Tana's hand, and squeezed. Tana squeezed back. What Grandma and Grandpa didn't understand was that Tana wasn't messed up because of Mom. She was messed up because of Dad. If Dad had just given Mom some blood instead of locking her up, none of the bad stuff would have happened. Mom wouldn't be dead and Tana wouldn't be scarred and no one would be sad. Maybe they'd all live in Cold Town now. Or maybe they would have immigrated to Amsterdam or something, where it was still illegal to be a vampire, but nobody cared. It can happen very fast, Miss Baez was saying. Even before the symptoms appear, the vampire blood is preparing the body for turning. So once that person drinks human blood, they're going to become a vampire. It takes less than an hour to die, and as soon as 15 minutes, they can be back up again, with new teeth, denser muscles, and that newborn vampire hunger. Uses up a lot of energy to change the way they do. So until they feed, they're not going to be able to control themselves too well. You got to stay away from the newly turned, no matter how well you knew them in life. Miss Baez walked to the edge of the stage. How about a fun exercise? I'm going to teach you a big word. Does anyone know what an apotropaic is? Pearl didn't, but some boy called out that it was stuff vampires didn't like. Wild roses, garlic, called the stinking rose, holy symbols, running water, hawthorn. Pearl knew all those already. Hemlock explained them on his bounty hunting show. According to Miss Baez, though, some of them didn't work. She'd used a holy symbol twice while she was in Cold Town, and neither time did it have any effect. I bet they won't let her talk about all the creepy stuff, Pauline said under her breath. All the people drinking animal blood to stay human, even drinking their own blood. People staying drunk for months to reduce the hunger. Is that true? Pearl whispered back. Does it work? Tana shrugged. People even drink vampire blood if they can get it, Pauline went on, low-voiced, talking as though she were telling a ghost story. They say a couple of bounty hunters in Europe are pretty much addicted to the stuff. But you don't get better, you just don't get worse. It's like resetting the infection from day one. Time for questions, Miss Baez said from the stage. I can't promise I have all the answers, but I'll be as honest as I can. Why don't they just let people out of Cold Town if they want to go? A girl asked. If they're not infected, what's the difference? Money, Miss Baez said. It costs the government a lot of money to run Cold Towns, and a lot of money to test people for release. That money has to come from somewhere, so it comes from the budget for bounty hunters. Plus, the government doesn't want all the people to get out. If they did, what would the vampires eat? Each other? The quarantine would break down. Look at Principal Wong, Pauline whispered to Pearl. She almost blew a gasket at that answer. Aren't you mad you were stuck there? One of the boys asked. Miss Baez shrugged. I left Mad behind a long time ago. The world is the way it is. I can only fix my little piece of it. And I choose to do that by telling kids the facts, so they don't believe everything they hear on the internet. A pulse of laughter rose up from the teachers at that.
Tana stuck her hand up suddenly. Pearl's heart started to thud, afraid of what she was going to say.
Yes? Asked Miss Baez, pointing to her.
Tana stood up.
Can't they drink each other's blood?
Excuse me? I mean, if all the humans were dead, or if they ate everyone in every cold town, and they couldn't get out, what would happen? Wouldn't they feed on one another?
Miss Baez nodded.
You want to know a secret? Vampire blood is pretty great for vampires. It grants them a piece of the drained vampire's power. So, yeah, they can drink it.
Why?
One of the teachers burst out. Pearl hadn't heard anything like that before, and she was surprised.
Think of it like the accumulation of toxins in animals. At the lowest level of the food chain, there is a very tiny bit of toxin in each, say, blade of grass. Now, if a mouse comes along and eats lots and lots of grass, all the toxins from those individual blades accumulate in the mouse. Then a raptor comes along and eats a dozen mice and gets all those toxins and so on and so on. If you think about toxins like power, then you can see why the older the vampire, the more power it's accumulated, and the more power another vampire can absorb by draining it.
They don't need us at all, said Pearl under her breath. She imagined a world with only vampires in it, all red eyes and cold skin.
So long as they can't have babies, they do, Pauline whispered back. You can't have new vampires without new people. And if you eat all the old vampires, you're going to need new ones ASAP.
How come they don't, then? Tana called down, still standing, not bothering to raise her hand again.
Why don't they just eat one another and leave us alone?
Principal Wong stood up, ready to scold Tana, but Miss Baez wasn't paying any attention.
Oh, they do, kid, said Miss Baez. They eat one another. They eat us. They eat every damn thing. They'll drink up the whole world if we let them.
Chapter 11. Death is the king of this world. 'Tis his park where he breeds life to feed him. Cries of pain are music for his banquet. George Eliot. The inside of the dead last rest stop was huge, bigger than most malls, but with services malls would never have any reason to provide. Showers for a dollar, canned goods, a boutique with sepulchral dresses and coats in black and purple and silver. A pharmacy. An interfaith chapel. 5 restaurants, 3 bars, a dance club. And even a bag check so that people arriving by bus could pay $2 to dump their luggage for a couple of hours while they shopped or slept in rentable coffin-shaped pods. Loud Eurotrance remixes of funeral music pumped out of speakers all along the walls, and every store window announced the same thing, whether in big, blinking letters or hand-lettered signs. Open 24 hours. Tana felt dazed. It was surreal to be inside of a brightly lit space, safe, when she'd been in mortal danger for the last 12 hours. The central area was a hexagonal room with polished black floors, ebonized benches, and a central sculpture of what looked like a large red crystal heart with a stake driven through it. Televisions along the walls broadcast popular feeds from inside Springfield's cold town. On one, golden-haired Lucien Moreau was teaching a human girl how to waltz. On another, a ginger-haired vampire girl was talking to the camera, describing how her night had gone while a human boy cuddled up to her pale skin, offering her a piece of tubing taped to the needle in his wrist. Tourists stopped to stare at the feeds. They took pictures in front of the crystal heart, arms thrown over one another's shoulders, and 2 wide smiles on their mouths. A tired-looking middle-aged woman stood off to one side, handing out pink flyers to anyone who passed her.
"Have you seen my daughter?" she asked over and over. "She's only 12. Please, I know she came through here. Have you seen her?"
At first,
People under the age of 16 weren't allowed to go through the gates of the cold towns. But then a 9-year-old was turned away because the guards thought she was lying about being bitten. She wasn't. People died. There were tests for infections, but the tests were expensive, making self-reporting critical to keeping the quarantine. Since that incident with the child, anyone was allowed to enter any cold town at any age without proving anything. Tana looked at the woman, at her tired face and at the smiling little girl on the flyer. She thought of Pearl and wondered what that girl had imagined was waiting for her behind the gates. Midnight walked past the woman without even seeming to notice her and collapsed on one of the benches. Both her hands pressed the velvet cloth of her shirt over the scratches to stop the bleeding. "I'll get bandages and stuff," said Winter. "You stay right here, and you stay with her," he scowled at Tana. Tana nodded, and Winter walked toward the pharmacy, looking back twice. His big boots clopped like hooves on the shiny granite tile floor. A few passing kids wearing backpacks stopped to stare at Tana in her bloody clothes, and at Midnight, with her smeared mascara and the way she was clutching her shoulder. "What are you looking at?" Tana told the kids, snarling the way Pauline would have, and they hurried off. Midnight smiled at her lopsidedly. "I'm so incredibly sorry," Tana said. "About what happened, I'm sorry you got hurt." How did you wind up with them? With Aiden and the other one?" Midnight asked. Her lips looked chapped and bluish under the fluorescent lights. "There was a party, and everyone died," Tana said. She didn't expect it to come out quite like that, quite so plain and awful. Midnight nodded and closed her eyes as if the scratches stung. "How bad? It wasn't that thing that was on the news up north." "The news?" For a moment, Tana was confused. It felt like something too private for the news, but of course that didn't make sense. "I don't know, maybe." "It was! Oh my God! I saw all the tweets and the pictures someone leaked of the crime scene. You were really there?" Tana nodded, not sure what else to say. She had no words for it that were big enough. "Wow," Midnight said. "And you got away. That's major." "More or less, we got away," said Tana. "Hey, do me a favor, okay?" Midnight reached into her pocket with one hand and took out her phone, the face of it scratched from the pavement. "Hold this while I talk. My tripod is in my luggage, but I don't want to bother getting it. This is the real stuff. The stuff I promised to tell everyone. Just try to hold it steady." "Sure," Tana said, somewhat taken aback. It wasn't as if she hadn't taken video of anyone before. Of Pauline, so she could see how her auditions looked, or of friends acting stupid and goofing around, but she'd never filmed anyone who'd just been attacked and was still bleeding.
"And you could say something, too. You should. Everyone wants to know what it's like to be you right now."
Tana shook her head quickly. The idea of talking about what had happened brought back every awful image. The staring dead eyes, the whispering voices through the door, her back slammed against the ground of the gas station with Aiden towering over her. "I don't know, myself."
"Later, maybe," said Midnight, handing the phone to Tana. "How do I look?"
Tana had no idea how to answer that. Midnight looked pale and beautiful, streaked and bloodied. "You look fine," Tana said, as neutrally as possible.
"I guess that's going to have to do."
Midnight winced as she pulled on the ripped neck of her velvet shirt, exposing her collarbone so Tana could get a good shot of the gouges. They were grisly, wet with blood, and swollen at the edges.
"You know how to use this thing?"
Tana touched her fingers to the phone, hitting the small picture of the video on the bottom corner.
"I think so."
"Aren't you worried your parents are going to see this? Let the cops know where you are? I mean, you're underage runaways." Midnight snorted.
"Our parents don't get what we do online. They're not smart enough. They're nothing like us. Trust me, by the time they figure out what happened, we'll be long gone."
"Okay," Tana said, holding up the camera and clicking the button to begin filming.
"Ready."
"Hi," Midnight said, an odd intensity coming over her as she gazed into the lens.
"It's me, faithful servant of the night, adventurer, poet, and madwoman. And what an adventure I've been on. Lots has happened since I posted last. Winter and I made it to the rest stop outside of Cold Town, so we're less than an hour from being inside. It's exactly like what we always believed. When you're following your deepest, truest, darkest destiny, the universe clears you a path. We met some people who are going to give us a ride. In fact, you might recognize them from the news, but I'll get to that later. First, I have to tell you about what happened to me. Then Winter returned with a bag of medical supplies. Midnight asked Tana to keep the phone recording as Winter bound up her shoulder, spraying the wounds with antiseptic and taping down gauze bandages. She narrated all the while, eyes on the camera, even when it obviously hurt. When that was done, Midnight gulped down some aspirin and said she wanted to edit and upload the video to her blog before she did anything else. Listening to her, Tana had to admire the way Midnight was able to turn what happened into a madcap story and a part of the legend of Midnight. Even the not-so-good stuff was spun on its head to be enviable. Tana could imagine herself watching the video and wishing she was as brave and lucky as the girl in it. But standing in front of Midnight, knowing what actually happened, Tana could see that Midnight wasn't just telling a story to other people. She was telling a story to herself. She was smoothing over all the frightening parts until she wasn't scared. But she should be, Tana thought. She should be scared.
There's free Wi-Fi throughout the building. I'm just going to plug into the outlet over there.
Midnight pointed toward the food court. Taking the phone out of Tana's hand, grinning, she aimed the camera part at her. The corner light flashed.
Meet me when you're done with whatever. You don't mind, right? You didn't have to say anything.
Tana was sure she looked awful, but a bad picture online was the least of her problems. She felt worn out, cold and brittle. She could smell Midnight's blood, a metallic scent, and wondered if that meant the infection had finally kicked in. Or maybe it was nothing. Maybe she should stop worrying.
No, I guess I don't mind.
Tana glanced over at a display of logo shirts. I'm going to pay to take a shower. Winter gave her an almost friendly smile, the first since Aiden had attacked his sister.
That's a good idea. Who knows how much hot running water we're going to get inside.
Tana wanted to say that she was still making up her mind about Cold Town, but she hesitated too long and then felt foolish. She waved an awkward goodbye instead. The gift store was kitschy, full of shot glasses, bumper stickers, and t-shirts. Baby tees with corpse bait across the front. Big black sleep shirts with dripping letters. Up all night at the dead last rest stop. I bite on the first date. Deadest generation. Nothing is the new everything, and I'll take my coffee with your blood in it. There were mirrors with cartoonish rivulets of blood running from two puncture wounds, silk-screened onto them, so that when you looked in the mirror, it seemed as if you'd been bitten. And there were necklaces, spelling out the word cold in looping cursive letters. An elderly lady with short gray hair was paying for a packet of water-purifying pills and tins of food when Tana passed her at the checkout counter. The lady wore a Chanel-esque black suit and carried a gold-tipped cane with mother-of-pearl roses along the length. Her back was bent, making her seem hunched like a vulture.
What?
The woman accused the clerk, her roomy blue eyes steady.
You think dying is just for the young?
Tana left before she could hear the clerk's reply. In the next store, the boutique, she thumbed through lacy satin gowns with names like Innocence Shattered and Ruined Blossom and Sliced Open Apple of Sin. She found a pretty blue dress that she liked and that would have probably fit her, but at $112, it was way too expensive. Tana had the same 40 she'd had at the gas station. She'd left the bag of bills where she'd knocked it, on the ground next to the car. She hoped it was still there. If she was going to hole up someplace and wait out the next 40-some hours to see if she was infected, she'd need more money, no matter its provenance. And she'd need the money even more if she went to Cold Town with the rest of them. At least there was a sale rack in the back with marked-down clothes. She managed to find a wrinkled gray slip dress about a size too big for her, priced at $25. She got that and the cheapest pair of underwear in the store, crimson with ridiculous black lace trim and a silly bow, for an additional $10. The bored-looking clerk, a man with huge silver studs through his ears and a tattoo of a snake wrapped around his neck like a noose,
rang her up and took her money with clear disdain. She knew she was going to look kind of overly fancy and also a little bit naked in the slip dress, but she wasn't willing to face an actual vampire while wearing a hilarious slogan nightshirt. And all she wanted to do with her current clothes was set them on fire. She took her purchases in their glossy black boutique bag with purple tissue paper wrapped around each garment and went to the showers. There, she was able to pay $1 for 15 minutes in an individual stall and $3 for packets of body wash and shampoo, a tiny toothbrush kit, and a towel only slightly larger than a washcloth that had to be returned. A large mirror hung in the hallway outside the stalls, where women and girls sat on benches, lacing up chucks and rolling on deodorant. Seeing herself, she stopped to stare at her reflection, as though the girl in the glass was someone else, someone unknown and unknowable. Her black hair looked wild, with bits of twigs and leaves stuck in it. The skin around her eyes was dark as a bruise, probably half from sleeplessness, and half from smeared mascara that she made worse when she'd splashed her face with water. Even her blue eyes looked gray under the harsh overhead lights. Her once white dress was as bad as she'd guessed, brown at the hem where the root beer had soaked into it, striped with dark streaks of blood and dirt. There were at least two visible rips in the fabric, and her high boots were spattered with grime and mud. But the worst part was her expression. She made herself try to smile, but it came out wrong. She'd once seen a bunch of vintage mug shots in a magazine, and there had been one she'd stared at for a long time. There'd been something off about the girl in it. Now Tana saw that strangeness in herself. She wasn't okay. She really, really didn't look like someone who was okay. Going into the stall, Tana hung her pocketbook, towel, and bag of clothes on the hook farthest from the nozzle, unlaced her boots and tied them together so they could hang with her other things. Then she pulled off her mother's baby doll dress, her bra, and her underwear, and tossed them into a corner. Her muscles felt stiff and sore, her hands fumbling over the most basic tasks. When the hot water hit her shoulders, it felt so good she groaned out loud. She washed her hair twice and combed it through with her fingers to get all the twigs out. She scrubbed the skin with her fingernails, not caring if it abraded, caring only that she was clean. The water cut off after her 15 minutes were up, and she leaned back against the tiles. Her heartbeat hammered against her chest in alarm, but nothing was wrong. It was just leftover terror. She didn't feel chilled through anymore. She didn't want to attack the woman in the next shower stall. She felt exhausted and scared and scraped up, but other than that, she felt pretty much the way she always had. She felt fine. She thought about Aiden out in the parking lot, and about Gabriel's bare arm. If Aiden drank enough of Gabriel's blood, maybe he'd be better for a while, but they were just buying time and scraps and tatters. It had been almost 7 hours since the vampire's teeth scraped her leg. Too soon to let herself hope she'd be okay, but she found herself hoping anyway. She thought of her own bed in her own room and imagined herself curled up there, her cat sleeping on her feet, and Pearl doing her homework in the next room. She thought of bright light streaming through the windows and her phone ringing because Pauline wanted to go to the pool hall where the cute guy worked to play game after game of darts, as they'd all done last summer, scoping him out between throws. And she thought of how, once Pauline and the guy finally dated, they'd all snuck back in there one night with Aiden and thrown stuff at the board. First kitchen knives, then forks, then even broken pieces of glass someone had dropped. It had turned into an oddly surreal night, but not as surreal as this one. After a few moments, she forced herself to dry off as much as she could with a small towel and to step into her new clothes, tossing the old ones into the boutique bag. Without a bra, the thin fabric of her new dress showed the outline of her nipples, but she couldn't bring herself to put on any piece of clothing she'd been wearing for the last 30-odd hours, no matter how bare she looked. She reached into her purse to see if she had a comb and some lipstick, anything to make herself seem less sickly, when she noticed that her phone was flashing. She had 6 new messages. She must have turned her ringer off at some point at the party and not remembered to turn it back on. Stepping into the dressing area, she put the phone back into her bag and found a comb to draw the tangles out of her hair. As wavy as it was, it would tangle again fast. but at least she'd look a little less messy. Maybe by some alchemy it would make her feel less of a mess, too. She brushed her teeth in the sink over and over again till her gums bled. Then she listened to the messages. The first one was from her father, giving her hell for not coming home in the morning. The next was from her father again, asking her where she was, saying the police had called. Then there was a message from Pearl, 12-year-old arrogance dripping from her voice, saying that Dad was worried and that she was sure Tana was fine, but could Tana call, please, because listening to him was boring. Then there was a call from a police officer leaving a number, saying that he understood she'd been at a party the night before and he needed to talk to her. Then her sister again, saying to please, please, please call. This time she sounded frightened. The last message was from her father. The police have been to the house, he said. They described to me what happened at the party and how only 3 kids, in all probability you and 2 others, managed to get away. Since you haven't come home or tried to contact us, I'm assuming that you've been infected. There was a long pause. When her father resumed speaking, his voice was unsteady. Thank you for staying away, Tana. It's the responsible thing to do. And I hope that no matter what happens, you leave us. Especially Pearl. With our memory of you the way it was. We love you, sweetheart, and we'll miss you. But please don't come back here. Don't ever come home. For a moment, she was tempted to call home anyway. To tell them that she was okay while she still could. To say something cruel to her father. To get him back for leaving a message like that. To at least text Pearl. You leave us with our memory of you the way it was. Tana deleted the messages and put her phone away. She'd decided she was going to Cold Town. She cleaned off her boots in the sink and laced them onto her feet, wishing she didn't have to. She'd have liked to never touch them again, but she didn't have the money for new shoes. The boots were a little damp, but she thought they'd dry soon. With the dollar and change she had left, she bought a slice of pizza and ate it, sitting on a plastic chair in the food court. It tasted like sawdust and cardboard. Across the way at a nearby table, some boys in baggy jeans were shoving one another in a good-natured way.
We should do what other countries do and blow those corpses sky high, said one of them,
leering at 2 girls with purple pigtails and black lipstick who were passing the table.
Bomb all the cold towns.
One of the girls turned around and flipped dual middle fingers at him.
Hey, idiot, you want to fight the vampires? Move to Europe. Too bad about the skyrocketing infection rate there.
Maybe I will. I'll have my own show, Slade Slays, and kill every vampire there is. How about that?
How about it's called Slade Dies, called the girl. That show I'd watch.
All the other boys at the table started laughing. Tana got up and threw away her grease-smeared paper plate. Then she walked over to where Winter and Midnight were sitting by the outlets. Midnight had her head bent over her laptop, earbud cords hanging down around her neck. Winter looked up at Tana and blinked a couple of times, pulling off his bulkier headphones, his blue hair flattened where he'd mussed it. She noticed for the first time the t-shirt he was wearing underneath his black jacket. It had the words, "Colder than you," across the front in small white letters. She snorted.
Wow, he said. You look much better.
Thanks, she made a face. You still want that ride? I'd understand if you decided not to take it. Winter touched Midnight's arm, making her look up.
We better talk about it. I think maybe...
We want the ride, Midnight said firmly, in a tone that dared her brother to contradict her. He didn't. Chapter 12. Call no man happy till he is dead. Aeschylus. Vampires were always more beautiful than the living. Their skin was without blemish, marble smooth and poreless. The older they got, the more their unnatural red eyes grew bright as poppies, and their hair became as lustrous as silk. It was as if whatever demon possessed them, whatever force kept their corpses from the grave, had refined them in the blaze of its power, burning away their humanity to reveal something finer.
Casper Morales had stolen the fire from Prometheus, and his children were spreading it. They looked absurdly gorgeous, glowing from the television like fallen angels. Even from the beginning, that was a problem. People liked pretty things. People even liked pretty things that wanted to kill and eat them. After the infections started burgeoning and the first walls around the infected areas were built, the crude ones that kept only some things inside, news cameras couldn't get enough coverage. Reporters were always climbing around the rubble, filming, putting their lives in danger. And it wasn't just television and newspapers. Flickr and Tumblr and Instagram were full of pictures of teeth and blood. In the beginning, an amateur videographer uploaded footage of long-limbed vampire girls feeding on a shock-faced middle-aged man. It got hundreds of thousands of hits in a matter of hours. Gossip columns ran long pieces on vampires who acquired an almost celebrity status, their string of kills only seeming to increase interest. Vampires were fairy tales and magic. They were the wolf in the forest that ran ahead to grandmother's house, the video game Big Boss who could be hunted without guilt, the monster that tempted you into its bed, the powerful, eternal beast one might become, the beautiful dead, La Belle Morte. And if, after gorging themselves in an orgy of death, they became less lovely, if they became bloated and purple and horrible, they hid it well. Everyone was afraid to die, and vampires never would. It was tempting to wish to be one, even if not everyone had the courage to try. But everyone wanted to see one, if from afar. And no one really wanted them gone. There were 7 hot zones in the United States, 7 cities kissed by Casper Morales, 7 places brought over into the dark. Of those cities, 6 became cold towns, and 5 of those cold towns remained operational. All but San Francisco had feeds running out, plenty of them corporate-sponsored and lucrative. Between the reality shows about vampire hunters, most of which had a high rate of cast turnover, and the reality shows featuring vampires, there was a very popular one cut from the live feed in Lucien Moreau's Cold Town Parlor. The United States stabilized into an odd detente with vampires. Cold towns were jails ruled by their inmates. Within them, vampires were free. But any vampire on the outside, without the protection of those walls, whether hiding, newly turned, or committing massacres, was fair game for hunters and for the military. And if people argued that the system was flawed, that the infection was still spreading, that romanticizing the dead was making the problem worse, well then, one only had to look at how bad things were outside the United States, and how much money there was to be made by continuing to let things stay just the way they were. Chapter 13. He Would Make a Lovely Corpse. Charles Dickens. When Tana got to the parking lot, Aiden was sitting in the back seat of a Crown Vic with the door open and his legs out. Gabriel was bent over him, one arm on the roof of the car, talking in a low tone. He stopped speaking when he caught sight of her. A breeze blew his hair back from his face, making it look like the ruffled feathers of a crow. "Hey," Tana said. Aiden looked a little less sick. His cheeks were even a slight pink. Gabriel had somehow acquired heavy-looking black motorcycle boots. She wasn't sure if he'd had them on when she'd woken up at the last stop, but he hadn't been wearing them at the gas station. She remembered his bare feet and the cracked bottle glass he didn't seem to notice. She wondered what he'd done to get those boots. "Please," she thought. "Please, no more. Please, no more horrors tonight." "The gates of Cold Town are close as my own shadow," Gabriel said. His wine-colored eyes studied her in her new dress and combed hair, as if he was trying to memorize the way she looked. It made her conscious that she was wearing barely more than a slip, and she pulled at the hem awkwardly. "You can turn me over to the guards when we arrive. There's a reward for vampires, I'm told." Tana gave Aiden a look, remembering what he'd said at the gas station. "I wonder who might have mentioned that." Just then, Midnight came up behind Tana, looking between Gabriel and Aiden intently. "Is he okay?" She tucked blue hair behind her ears.
"He will be," said Gabriel.
He'll be a new creature made from old skin. Aiden tilted his head toward Midnight.
Sorry about, you know, I hope I can still come to Cold Town with you.
Tana wanted to object to his giving up on getting better, but resisting blood would just get harder with time. He was being realistic, and who was she to tell him to throw away immortality? Midnight gave him a wavering smile. Winter, behind her, glowered. He had two overstuffed black garbage bags slung over one shoulder and a beat-up suitcase hanging from his other hand. Since she'd listened to her phone messages, an awful, numb calmness had settled over Tana, one that she was afraid to consider too closely, one that fed on bad ideas and adrenaline. She ached to make awful choices, to drown out all her thoughts in a cacophony of doing. She wished it was an unfamiliar feeling, that ache, the urge that made her hit the gas when she ought to hit the brake. She hoped this wasn't one of those decisions. But she couldn't imagine pleading with her father through the door to let her in. Couldn't imagine trying to prove that she wasn't infected, even if she turned out not to be. And didn't want to upset Pearl. Sometimes it seemed as though all her life was already used up in that dark basement. As if her mother's mouth on Tana's arm was the last thing in her life before this that had felt real. Everything else was just prologue and epilogue. A grace period of pretending that her life was going to be like other people's, that the bite didn't mark her as already touched by darkness, fated for darkness, a girl with one foot already in the grave. Instead of money, you can get a marker if you're turning in a vampire, Tana said, her mind finally starting to plan a future for herself, one where she came out ahead, one where she could survive. A marker lets one person out of Cold Town. We could get one of those. I could get one of those, if Gabriel will let me turn him in. She'd seen pictures of markers. Silver and iron disks with symbols around the outer rim, gold at the center surrounding a small hole, and supposedly some kind of chip inside. There was an heiress who ran away to Cold Town. Her parents, hoping to lure her out, hired bounty hunter after bounty hunter to get markers for her. She made a necklace out of them and wore it to the Eternal Ball every night until a gang member slit her throat and sold them off to the highest bidder. If Tana went inside with Gabriel and Aiden now, she'd be going to Cold Town with a way out. If she went cold and got caught later, she'd be chucked into a Cold Town anyway, and then she'd be stuck there. Her nihilistic plan was actually starting to make sense.
Tana, Gabriel began, you should not.
Yes, please come, Tana, Aiden said, cutting him off. He grinned in that persuasive way he had, half as if he'd been lost without you and half as if he thought he'd done you a favor by suggesting the thing you secretly wanted.
Think of all the fun we're going to have. Midnight's gonna show us around, right? She forgives me, doesn't she?
I don't know. That really hurt,
Midnight said lightly, a teasing half-smile on her mouth. Her gaze was hungry, though, focused on Aiden and Gabriel. Every part of her vibrated with yearning to be as they were, changed or changing.
I shouldn't have done that, Aiden said, and his expression was a match for hers, full of greedy desire.
You know what I want in return, Midnight said silkily. We didn't tell on you. We proved we're worthy. Your friend's probably hungry, and if he wants, he can...
Gabriel grabbed her chin before she could even gasp, swift and deadly as a shark rising from the depths.
Unless I am much mistaken, you told everyone. I saw your phone. Do you think I don't know what it does? I should drain you both and leave your bodies as a warning to those who seek death as if it were some hidden treasure.
Midnight's skin was flushed, her eyes bright. It was as though the words rolled past her and all she saw was the nearness of his mouth. Tana took a step closer, despite herself, drawn into the same delusion.
Let her go,
Winter said. He pulled at Gabriel's shoulder, but the vampire boy didn't move.
Perhaps Midnight and I should show Aiden what it is to truly feed, what it would be like for him if he tasted blood.
He spoke the words sweetly against Midnight's ear, as if to a lover. She swayed against him, his arm coming up and tightening, holding her in place. She looked confused then, instinct tinting her expression with the beginnings of panic.
I can hear your heart beating, like a wounded animal hurling its broken body against the walls of its cage. A pretty song.
Tana thought of what Gabriel had said in the car.